broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock here on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And welcome back to the program. This is Radio for Patriots by Patriots. And as usual, going places where their talk shows wish they could, but they can't. Marching over the softened heads of those that would hold us back and open the trap door to dumb. Yes, the trap door to dumb. We don't fall through that one much. Anyway, welcome back. And our website is philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. So join us over there for our live streaming video of the show, which we have right now, broadcasting here from in front of the El Pacifico. And we also have our five-day video archive, our archives of audio files, our daily podcasts. It's all there at philhendryshow.com. The Backstage Pass, the greatest value in entertainment history. All right. This is the 55th anniversary of something. You know what it is, Robert?
55, I'll say it ain't your birthday.
No, I'm a little bit older than that.
The 55th anniversary of when they bombed Hiroshima.
Wrong. Thought you were going to sneak a look, huh?
Well,
yeah, I told you, didn't I?
I told you was going to look.
I told you not to look, okay?
I thought it is Hiroshima, ain't it?
No, it's not. No, it is not Hiroshima. Excuse me, it's the 55th anniversary of the United States dropping the first airborne hydrogen bomb on the Bikini Atoll in the Pacific Ocean.
What?
The Bikini Atoll, that was the name of, well, you know what an atoll is?
Yeah, you don't pay the charge. Yeah.
Atoll, you don't pay the charge. Atoll, it's a small, little, itsy-bitsy, tiny, eeny, teeny-weeny island, man. It don't even qualify to be called an island. See the islands behind me here at the El Pacifico?
Yeah.
See right over here? Behind me is Anacapa. Where is it? There. And then on the other side of me is Santa Rosa. Those are real islands. This is an atoll. It's a little tiny island. Well, 55 years ago, which would make it 1956, the very first, am I right about that? 56? Yeah. The very first atomic bomb, very first hydrogen bomb, airborne hydrogen bomb, was dropped. Now, the reason why they're making this distinction is because we had a plutonium and uranium bomb that we dropped on Japan at the end of World War II. When we began testing other bombs, we began testing other bombs with other elements. And the element that we used then was the hydrogen atom. We didn't use the uranium or the plutonium atom.
What did you do that for?
I suppose because the atom was easier to split. Maybe it was a stable atom, but it was an easier atom to work with. I don't know. Maybe it was more powerful. It was an enormously powerful bomb, the hydrogen bomb. Now, the test was a success. It symbolized a huge leap in the nuclear arms race, the United States leaping ahead of Russia, which had gotten the atomic bomb and had developed it in the early 1950s.
Yeah, that's how I count on those two people.
Well, that's a load of horse. You mean the Rosenbergs?
Yeah.
What do you mean, yeah? He asked me.
Whatever he said.
Shut up.
No, but really, one of them people sold that secret to the Russians.
Well, you know, they say that they sold the secret to the Russians. Let me just be honest with you here. I'm going to ask you as an intelligent man, quote unquote, what are the odds the Russians weren't going to figure out how to split the atom? Are you kidding me or something? They had scientists working on that day and night. And the idea that it was some big secret, that cracks me up. First of all, the Russians beat us to Berlin. Now, guess where they went when they went to Berlin?
I don't know. They went and got Hitler's head.
They got Hitler's head, yeah, and they got all kinds of stuff. The other place they went in Berlin was the center, the scientific center where they were doing all of their nuclear testing, where the Germans, and thank God they didn't get the bomb, or there would have been hell to pay. But the Nazis were developing an atomic bomb, and Stalin made a beeline, baby. Boo! Beeline! To where that research was being done. As a matter of fact, as the story goes, Stalin was looking at a map of Berlin, He was standing there with his top generals. He knew that his forces were at the doorstep of Berlin and were ready to break through and eventually go into the chancellery, and that was going to be the end of the war. And he circled a sector in Berlin where the scientific experiments and much of the scientific research had been done on the atomic bomb. He circled it, and he mouthed the word gold, meaning go get it.
Well, did he find a bomb there?
They didn't find a bomb, but they effectively went in and grabbed all the research that the Germans have been doing on the atomic bomb. I don't think, and I'm just, you call me nuts, but I do not believe for one second that even if the Rosenbergs had not been passing whatever, quote, secrets, and since when is math a secret, you know?
Well, but we knew how to break, see, we knew how to do it.
What do you mean we knew how to do it? They're going to figure it out too, okay?
Yeah, but why make it easy for them?
Oh, get out of here. The fact is that even without the passing of secrets, those guys eventually were... But look, all's well that ends well, man. Because guess what happened? All the money and all the time and all the effort and all everything that the Russians and the Soviets put into all of that stuff, the military, the development of these weapons, the expansion of the great grand communist empire, I mean, they couldn't support it. Their economy, their way of life was not, it was never, ever going to be able to compete with ours. It was a losing race from the beginning. I wish we would have known that, or we would have recognized that. We probably wouldn't have spent as much money as we did. According to the History Channel, people who witnessed the test, this hydrogen bomb that landed on the Bikini Atoll, remarked the resulting fireball measured at least 4 miles in diameter and was brighter than the light from 500 suns. How would they know that? Because in certain hallucinogenic trips that they'd taken, they saw 500 suns.
Yeah, probably that LSD that the Army gave them.
Exactly. Anyway, in honor of the anniversary, Life.com has published a series of bomb test photos. Boo-hoo! That are both frightening and beautiful. I saw one of them. It looked fantastic.
Yeah, you try to print it off. They got to let it. I told you you're going to steal it.
I'm not looking to steal it, man. I wanted to put it on my website.
They're not going
to
let you do that, man. They don't do that no more.
Well, one of them was a riot. It was a picture of a guy and a woman and a general. And obviously she was the general's wife. And there's some guy with a smile on his kisser. And he's in a suit. And I don't know who they were. But they're ready to cut a cake. And it's a cake with a mushroom cloud cake formation on it.
What was that for? Probably the birthday of the A-bomb.
Yeah, it was the A-bomb's birthday, man.
You know, with that mushroom cloud on it.
Yeah, they made part of the cake look like a mushroom cloud. And so there they are, this general and the wife, and they're cutting this cake. Today it would be seen as a bad joke. Today, you'd get fired if you did something like that today. But back then it was, hey, look at this, man, let's cut this A-bomb cake. So anyway, Life.com's got these pictures, huh? And you can check out the images below. Now, they're showing a picture here, and these were some of the early images that I saw as a kid of the houses getting blown over and the whole, you know, the windstorm thing.
Yeah, they had one I'd seen where the ships. Which one was the ships?
Oh, that one was great.
What?
That one was very interesting. What they did was, it might have been this one. It might have been this Bikini Atoll bomb. They parked a bunch of junked battleships and old ships from the U.S. Navy, they parked them all out around this atoll. I may be wrong. If it's this one, it was another one. And then they parked those ships there, and they wanted to see what the damage would be to these ships. And they dropped the bomb. And you see the vapor cloud as it is beginning to expand out from the very base of the explosion. And obviously there's enormous waves that have been generated by it, too. And you see this thing just consume, as well as the waves, these ships looking like little bobbing toys. And it's just amazing. I mean, it would be frightening to be on one of those ships and see this coming at you. But now here's the interesting story. When the cloud dissipated and when the explosion finally dissipated, I believe like half of the ships were still afloat.
What?
Yeah. So the waves did not capsize them, and the power of the blast did not split the hulls apart or do anything to damage or deteriorate the structures at all. I think about half of them, it might have been more, that were still floating. So essentially, these ships withstood the wind from the blast, withstood the waves from the blast, withstood all this enormous explosive power, and were still floating.
So it was a dud.
So in a lot of ways, it was like they were disappointed because, what? You mean I could stick a ship out there? It ain't even going
to... Well, I don't get that, man. If that's an atomic bomb, that'll blow that ship to pieces. Hell, there ain't be nothing left of a ship.
Well, it didn't land right on the ship, you know.
What kind of bomb you got to drop on a ship? That's the stupidest A-bomb I ever heard about. You got to drop a bomb.
Well, you ain't going to drop an A-bomb on a ship. Okay, there's a bunch of ships out there.
Why not?
You're going to waste an atomic bomb on a ship. Hey, there's a ship. Let's drop an atomic bomb on it.
What are you talking about, man? There was nothing left of it.
But, I mean, what I'm they didn't drop the bomb right on the ships. They had the ships purposefully out around the explosive center of the blast. Okay?
Yeah, I know. And the waves came.
Then the waves came. And the explosive, the wind blast came. And these ships were not capsized. Now, obviously, they were drenched in radiation. But,
Other than that,
you know, hey, we can still use those ships, Dave. So it's a very interesting thing. And by the way, Life.com has these photographs of what, Bud?
Well, it's almost like you like atom bombs and everything. It's kind of scary.
No, I don't like atom bombs. Why do you say that?
Well, you want everybody to look at it.
Because it's very interesting photography, man. It's you have to admit, those are take your breath away in an atomic bomb explosion. It's just a frightening thing. Start crying about it.
I know you're all going to be crying.
It's just scary.
Oh, cut it out. You can check out the images below, meaning this one house that's coming apart, Bud. Here, look at it. Look at it.
Get out of here.
Look at it. Yeah. Anyway, not just the fireballs and explosions, but also the bomb's impact on test houses and mannequins. Man, I bet you peel the face off a mannequin.
Oh, no doubt, man. There wouldn't be no mannequin head left.
Except if those ships didn't, you know. What do you think, Bud?
Shut up.
I think it'd peel the kisser right off a mannequin. All right, we'll be right back. Bud's flipping out here. World famous Phil Hendry Show. And don't forget, philhendryshow.com. Guess what movie? I wouldn't exactly say it's stiffed, but you guys were looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. It didn't stiff, but it was like, huh? You know it's going to do a lot less money than its predecessor. I'll give you a hint. You'll never guess, though. Johnny Depp. Anyway, we'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah. Just sailing along here on a Friday night on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, now Saturday morning, and our website, philhendryshow.com, live streaming video of Phil TV right now. Watch us as we sit here on the sands of the El Pacifico. Speaking of the roiling surf, the high seas, Pirates of the Caribbean, the new 3D Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, has opened to a soft open, what they call a soft open. And what does that mean? It didn't make as much money as the one that came out a few years ago, which was At World's End. At World's End, that was, I forget the year right now, I'll find it for you, but that was the one that preceded this, and probably, no doubt, was in 2007, Jace? So that was just prior to the recession. But here's the thing. Recession, people, the entertainment business is pretty well recession-proof. I think, as we were talking during the break, people are just bored to tears with Johnny Depp and the whole Pirates of the Caribbean thing.
I think he's bitching.
You like the ride, man, you know.
Yeah, you like the ride. You like the movie.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Disney's 3D Pirates of the Caribbean on Strange Tides is off to a softer start in North America than overseas, playing the overall downturn. And the fact that it's been 4 years since the last installment in the blockbuster franchise played on a big screen. Judging by Friday matinees, boy, they got this dead on, too, because this was 9:40 Eastern time, and they were predicting from the Friday matinees, they said by the end of the business day today, or yesterday, I should say, Friday night, they would do around the mid-30s. And I just got the word from our friend, Mr. Rance, our producer. He said the word is out, 11:30 Pacific, they made $36 million, which is behind the number that they did in 2007. They won't make $100 million. That'll put them way behind $114 million. There's going to be a whole lot of people killing themselves.
Yeah, and it won't be because of the rapture, either.
No, they ain't going to kill themselves. It's, I guess guys lose their jobs over stuff like this.
Yeah, but here's the thing, man. They got way a lot more of them movies planned.
Well, let them plan them. I don't know. And there's going to be movies like this do good in the rental. This is all DVD, baby. I don't even know why they bother us. I don't know why it is. Just when I get caught up with the math on this thing, just when I think I'm a brain surgeon and I understand the ins and outs of Hollywood, they're going to come along and tell me what I knew they're going to tell me anyway. Oh, we don't give a damn, man, about these open. You know, it's called, we're going to get it back with the DVD sales. We'll get it back with the rentals. We'll get it back. We'll get it back. Not your back, but we'll get our back. So there you go, baby. Overseas is a different story, though, where they'll buy any garbage. I mean, where they really like American movies. Overseas, a different story. On Strange Tides is off to a dazzling start, grossing $44.2 million on Wednesday and Thursday as it rolled out in its first 37 territories, 10% ahead of At World's End. Foreign box office observers say On Strange Tides films should open north of $150 million internationally and as high as $200 million. Open $200 million. Wow. Of course, that's in more countries than just America. So why do you think that is, that foreign countries really go in for that stuff?
Well, I know that they like Conan Barbarian, and they like a lot of those movies. They like a lot of American action movies.
Yeah. How come that is?
Well, they like American action movies because they don't speak English, so they can watch stuff blow up. We blow stuff up better than anybody, man. You ought to know that by now.
Well, that's true.
So we come out with a movie with stuff's blowing up, man. We blow it up. They don't speak any English. They don't give a crap what the plot's about. They just like to see Arnold with his, big chest or some other action star riding around on a motorcycle or in a spaceship or something, blowing the hell out of something, if you'll pardon the expression.
Yeah, and that they don't need a lingo.
Yeah, what do you mean, English?
Yeah, they don't need to know no English lingo. And they don't, and they don't care, and that's fine with us. Other news, lifeguards high pay riles California beach city. So while, you know, these guys are blowing up the world and making less south of $100 million, the lifeguards here in the city of Los Angeles and its environs are making nice bread. For you guys listening in other parts of the country, get a load of this. And don't think it's anything we're happy about. We got lifeguards around here, and I shouldn't say we. This is a county-by-county thing. This is in Orange County, which is well south of us. There's some guys down there that are lifeguards making 200 G's a year.
No.
Yeah. Aurora Toussaint brings her disabled son to the sun-kissed beaches of this Southern California city, Newport Beach, almost every day in the summer, knowing that the lifeguards who watch from their towers will be there in seconds should anything go wrong. Yet Toussaint was shocked to learn that most of the full-time lifeguards in the city earn well over $100,000 in total compensation a year, including salary, overtime, and benefits, more than Toussaint made in her previous life as a nurse, and more than she believes is right in an economy where pink slips have become common fare. When I first heard that, I was amazed at how much they make. To think that these are lifeguards, that's more than some doctors make. Well, I wouldn't say that.
Well, how do you know?
Come on. Well, maybe it is. Anyway, that's the kind of reaction Newport Beach's 13-member full-time lifeguard crew has drawn this month, since the local newspaper editorialized about lifeguard salaries, benefits, and overtime pay that at least two instances top $200,000 a year as a city struggles to rein in pension costs. All the cities are. Now, Newport Beach is a wealthy community. There's a lot of bread there. I don't know if it's West Palm Beach bread. It's close. I don't know if it's Beverly Hills bread. It's close. It's good. It's Southern California beach money in a very built up and high end community, and the lifeguards making 200 grand a year. Not all of them. I mean, that's the top pay of a lifeguard chief. Base salaries for the Newport Beach lifeguards range from $58,000 for the lowest paid officer to $108,000 for a battalion chief, according to the 2010 city report. And then they get compensation, overtime, and all kinds of jazz. So people are flipping out on that one, huh?
Yeah, but you figure their lifeguards in California are better looking and everything.
So?
What's that got to do with it?
Well, if you come to California, go to the beach, you're going to see a lifeguard that looks like he belongs there, not some, like a hunchback.
What town got a hunchback for a lifeguard?
Where?
They probably got hunchbacks in like Georgia beaches.
Yeah, that's right, bud. They've got hunchback lifeguards in Georgia.
Well, I'm just saying they don't have movie star looking guys.
Are you telling me the reason why these cats are getting paid good is they look like movie stars?
What's that? What sense does that make? What if a movie star come out and save your ass and you drown, but the guy looks like Brad Pitt?
Well, he looks like Brad Pitt. They're so the tourists are happy.
Great, while you drown. We'll be back on the Phil Henry Show. That's nuts. Back here in just a moment with more, including a wrestler known as the Macho Man, is no more. This is the Phil Henry Show.
Randy Savage.
Yes, yes, yes.
Phil Henry. For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And we are here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. Phil TV and HD is there. We're on Twitter at twitter.com/realphilhenry. On Facebook at facebook.com/philhenry. We're on...
That's it.
Okay, that's it. 877-876-PHIL is the number you can reach us at during our character and guest and interview hours. But right now, we're doing our news and commentary. So where were we? Oh, you want to do... Go ahead, bud. Do your impression. Oh, man.
Brother.
Yeah, here. This is my impression of Macho Man. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, Hulk Hogan. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's better than you.
Well, man, I didn't even try to do a Randy Savage. I'd do better than that.
Oh, yeah, Hulk Hogan.
That sucks.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, it's better than, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. God, have a little respect, dude.
Yeah, no kidding, man. Man passed on today.
Well, that's what I was just saying. Oh, yeah, Hulk Hogan.
Oh, get out of here with your cheesoid impression. What we're talking about here, folks, and don't touch the mic pot, bud, because you just made it go up and my ears were almost exploded. Randy Macho Man Savage, the professional wrestler known with his raspy voice, the sunglasses and the bandanas that he wore in the ring, and the young woman named Miss Elizabeth, who often accompanied him. He died in a car crash on Friday in Florida. He was my age, 58 years old. How do you like that?
Yeah, look at the good shape he was in, too.
Man, 58 years old, a Florida Highway Patrol crash report said the former wrestler, whose legal name was Randy Mario Poffo, was driving a Jeep Wrangler when he lost control in Pinellas County around 9:25 in the morning. The Jeep veered over the raised concrete medium divider, crossed over the eastbound lanes, and crashed head-on into a tree. Now, police have speculated that Mr. Poffo, Randy Macho Man Savage, might have suffered a medical event before the accident.
What's that?
He could have had, like, a heart attack.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you think about it, the dude just suddenly is, like, going across a median, across these traffic lanes, and, like, bang into a tree. It might have been a heart attack or something, a stroke of some kind. They won't know until they perform an autopsy. The report said a woman in the vehicle, identified as his wife, Barbara L. Poffo, she's 56, suffered minor injuries. A statement from Stamford, Connecticut-based World Wrestling Entertainment said the passenger was the wrestler's current wife. Both were wearing their seatbelts, according to the police report. According to the statement, Poffo will be greatly missed by WWE and its fans. Savage was a charismatic wrestler made famous for his Macho Man nickname and his "Oh yeah" catchphrase that you've heard Bud and me and Robert Butcher.
Hogan.
Yeah, that's it, man.
That's close.
He ain't going to, "Oh yeah, Hogan."
Well, him and Hogan was enemies.
He and Hogan were enemies. There was one point when they became friends. You remember that one?
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, he and Hulk Hogan were like arch enemies. And Hogan beat Randy Savage. Well, I forget which one. I think they beat each other for the world wrestling title. But at one point they went, Randy Savage was a good guy and teamed up with Hogan. I forget for what, though. Savage was a charismatic wrestler made famous by his Macho Man nickname and his "Oh yeah" catchphrase. He was a champion in Vince McMahon's World Wrestling Federation and later Ted Turner's now defunct World Championship Wrestling. Poffo was under contract with WWE from 1985 to 1993 and held both the WWE and the Intercontinental Championships. WWE, by the way, is what WWF became. World Wrestling Federation, they had to change their name because of the World Wildlife Fund.
They said they owned that?
Yeah, the World Wildlife Fund said that WWF was technically, they'd been known as WWF longer, so that's what they did. So he had the Intercontinental belt and the WWE belt. Our sincerest condolences go out to his family and friends. We wish a speedy recovery to his wife, said the WWE. Savage defined the larger-than-life personalities of the 1980s World Wrestling Federation, now WWE. He wore sequin robes bejeweled with Macho Man on the back, rainbow-colored cowboy hats and oversized sunglasses, part of a unique look that helped build the WWF into the mainstream phenomenon that it became. For most of his career, his valet, Miss Elizabeth, was by his side. Is that what she was, a valet?
Well, I mean, like, I thought she was his coach.
What do you mean his coach? I'm sure she's his coach.
Well, that's what they said.
Well, I don't know if they ever said she was his coach. But like her I always thought she was like an advisor or something.
Well, hey, she didn't be an advisor.
Oh, wow, man. Maybe a brain surgeon going to help you, huh?
I'm saying... Maybe I don't know.
Exactly. You don't know, so shut up, okay?
Yeah.
You too. So she was his valet, if that's what they're calling her. I don't know what that is. She held his cape, you know?
Yeah, she checked his cape.
Anyway, she was by his side. They later divorced. She was married to him. Elizabeth Hewlett was her name. I remember Miss Elizabeth. She was very pretty, you know?
Yeah, she was very pretty. She had that long... Like a shiny dress and everything.
Yeah, it had a lot of diamonds on it.
Right, and so anyway, she was with him. Her name was Elizabeth Hewlett. She was his real-life wife at the time. But they later divorced, and Hewlett died in 2003. She died at the age of 42 in what was later ruled a prescription drug overdose. Wow. She was among many performers in the sport to die young. They made that note in the story, and it's interesting because of there's been a lot of tragedy in professional wrestling, not in terms of murder or violence, although maybe there's been that, but there's been a lot of, you know, the steroid thing, that guy that killed his family, dudes that just got into accidents and stuff, you know, a lot of them. Others include Carl Mr. Perfect Hennig. I remember that guy. He died of a cocaine overdose in 2003 at the age of 44. And Chris Benoit, here it is, who killed his wife and son and then committed suicide in their Georgia home in 2007. Benoit was 40. That cat, they said that was steroids, right?
Yeah, they said the steroids drove him mad and everything like that.
The WWF made Savage their champion after a win over, I love this guy, Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man, yeah, in the main event at WrestleMania in 1988. That's the one I remember seeing. That's the one. And then the next year, Hogan won. Savage had not appeared for a major wrestling organization since 2004 when he performed for Total Nonstop Action. He was at times both the most popular and most hated wrestler in entertainment. His flying elbow off the top rope was mimicked by basement and backyard wrestlers everywhere. Savage made good use of his deep, raspy voice as a corporate pitchman as well, for years ordering Slim Jim fans to snap into a Slim Jim. You remember that?
Yeah, man, those are great commercials.
Snapping, and then he's most known for his legendary rivalries with Hulk Hogan, Ricky Steamboat, and Ric Flair wrestlers wrestlers took to Twitter, let fans know Savage won't be forgotten. Did you see any of that?
Yeah, I seen another one, or Dusty Rhodes said something, and a couple other ones, too. Dwayne The Rock.
Yeah, and Cactus Jack, too.
Cactus Jack? I met Cactus Jack in Atlanta. Big guy, huge guy, like 6'5 or 6'6. Anyway, I'm not really a wrestling fan. I guess people think that I am, huh?
Yeah, you sound kind of like a redneck.
Yeah, you do.
Well, what do you guys sound like? You know all about these guys, too. Anyway, there's probably five or six of us with Andre the Giant and Hogan, and thankfully myself and Flair, that when their names pop up, even if you're not a fan, you know who in the hell these people are, said former wrestler and WWE Hall of Famer Dusty Rhodes. You say, I know this guy. I know Macho Man Randy Savage. He was part of that breed. We lost a good one. Dwayne The Rock Johnson hailed Savage as one of his childhood inspirations and heroes. while Mick Cactus Jack Foley called Savage one of my favorite performers. Hogan said he and Savage had just started talking again after 10 years. He had so much life in his eyes and in his spirit. I just pray that he's happy and in a better place, and we miss him, Hogan said. While so many personalities who left the WWF to WCW, like Hogan, Roddy Piper, and Mean Gene Okerlund, were welcomed back to the company and even inducted into the Hall of Fame, Savage never returned. Rhodes said Savage had prudently saved his money and was content to remain out of the spotlight. He was a recluse, almost, said Rhodes by telephone. Whatever he was doing, he wanted that privacy. Yeah, he was out of the picture for 10 years, but he didn't want it to be in the picture. Savage was a minor league catcher in the 1970s for St. Louis and Cincinnati before turning in his uniform for his tights.
His tights. His tights.
Ow! Shut up.
Hey, man, have some respect.
Before turning in his uniform for his tights, his father, Angelo Poffo, was a longtime wrestler, and his brother, Leaping Lanny Poffo. Dude, I know who that name was. Also a 1980s WWF mainstay. Condolences from fans poured in to Lanny Poffo's Facebook page on Friday. There it is, man. I know we took a little bit of time on that, but it's funny about wrestling because while it's an entertainment product, it is not a sport. It's still a fascinating entertainment exhibition, in my opinion, you know?
Yeah, I mean, because a lot of those moves, those guys do those pretty heavy moves.
Yeah, it's an exhibition of not really wrestling moves, because those aren't wrestling moves. They're like professional wrestling moves, if you want to give them a name. But there's certainly nothing that you learn in the college game, you know?
Yeah, I seen college wrestling one time, and then I seen it in Olympics. It's not even anywhere near as good as the one as a WWE.
Well, all right, but I mean, what the point I'm making here is the WWE, WWF, all that stuff was an exhibition of athleticism as well as theater. It had classic good guys, and still does, good guys and bad guys, and all of those marvelous supersonic and superhero personalities that we love. And I think one of the things that was fun about it was that it must have been a gas for those guys to create a lot of these characters, you know?
Yeah, I saw one time. I love the Junkyard Dog, man.
Yeah, they had a Junkyard Dog, and they had Bad News Brown.
Yeah, Junkyard Dog, Bad News Brown. They had the Ultimate Warrior.
Oh, yeah, that guy was an idiot.
Why'd he say that?
Because I heard him talk one time. He's all stupid.
the Ultimate Warrior?
Yeah, well, what'd he sound like, man?
He's all like, yeah, I'm the Ultimate Warrior, and I are powerful.
He did not.
Yeah, he did.
The Ultimate Warrior was an idiot. Anyway, so it's great theater. I think you grow out of it a little bit. The older you get, okay, great. I've been there, done that. I remember, do you remember those two idiots they had, the Bushwhackers?
Man, those guys were stupid. You talk about dumb.
The Bushwhackers. And then that other clown with the 2x4.
Yeah, that's Jim Hacksaw Duggan. He's an idiot. He probably took the 2x4 off his head.
Yeah, all of those guys. All right. So Randy Macho Man Savage, dead at the age of 58 in an automobile accident yesterday in Florida, although autopsy results obviously will determine if there was any other predetermining factor. And like I said, the Florida Highway Patrol speculated that there might have been a medical event that caused the car to go out of control. The world-famous Phil Henry Show will be coming back for our final segment. Don't forget, coming up tonight at 7 o'clock, we have our KFI, our local Los Angeles show, and you can join us for that one online at philhenryshow.com. When we come back, we'll clean up some other news here. They got some treatment for paralyzed people, and a dude with a completely paralyzed guy stood up today and took a few steps. I don't know what this treatment is, but it's insane. We'll talk about that and some other news when we come back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. By the way, what is Tweetgate? Comcast Tweetgate? We'll find out.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. Radio for patriots by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
I don't know. I'm going to try to communicate this to you guys. And again, I got sucked in. I love the headline. Comcast Tweetgate apology thrown back in face. In January of this year, the U.S. Federal Communications Commission voted to approve Comcast's $6.5 billion deal to acquire NBC Universal. One of the more pro-deal commissioners was Meredith Baker. On May 11th, Baker announced that she would resign from the FCC and join Comcast as the government affairs liaison for the NBC Universal division, lobbying the same government she just resigned from. Now I remember that story.
Yeah, you're all pissed off about it.
I wasn't pissed off. I remember I just said, well, ain't that typical? Ain't that typical? This stuff happens all the time. Did they think this is unique? This stuff happens all the time. On May 12th, an employee of the Seattle, Washington nonprofit Real Girls, which empowers young women from diverse communities by teaching them filmmaking, tweeted the following thing. OMG, oh my God, at the FCC Commissioner Baker voted to approve Comcast-NBC merger and is now lobbying FCC for a job at Comcast. On May 13th, Comcast Vice President Steve Kipp emailed Real Girls and told them that because of that tweet, his company was withdrawing $18,000 worth of grant money that had been pledged in support of the nonprofit filmmaking summer camp. Given the fact that Comcast has been a major supporter of Real Girls for several years, I'm frankly shocked that your organization is slamming us on Twitter. Never mind that what they said was essentially true, that this woman had left the FCC, is now joining, I don't know, did she join the FCC? Or I don't know which came first. She left the FCC and joined NBC, so what they said was true. And now the guy is pulling the money back. Then, between Kipp's email and this Thursday, a firestorm of criticism erupted against Comcast with articles appearing in the Washington Post, Tech Dirt, and elsewhere. On Thursday, Comcast said that cutting Real Girls funding was wrong, that Kipp was acting beyond his responsibilities, and that they would reinstate the $18,000. On Friday, Real Girls rejected Comcast's offer to reinstate the grant. Their spokeswoman, Teresa Mosier, encouraged the communications giant to craft a corporate policy that clearly defends freedom of expression in order to ensure that this situation does not arise again. No one has covered themselves with glory in this sad, sloppy saga. Not Baker for pulling her unsurprising but still depressing revolving door switch, leaving the FCC to join NBC, Comcast, Universal, blah, 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 blah. Not Kipp for expecting that a corporate donation carries with it an edict against criticism, taking back the $18,000 that he gave to Real Girls. And not Mosier, who is with Real Girls, for her high and mighty your money is dirty feel-good stance, firing cheap shots at Comcast rather than taking the high road and using the $18,000 to help those young women who benefit from her organization's services. The tug of war between corporate philanthropists and their nonprofit beneficiaries has a long history of struggle and redefinition. When your humble reporter, whoever this is, was a nonprofit fundraiser back in the 1980s, for example, such a profit for-profit, nonprofit partnerships were tagged with the rather explicit moniker of cause-related marketing, a term that's now out of favor in the more delicate days. Well, anyway, I think the essential story is here. I don't give a crap what this guy's opinion is. The essential story here was that the something happens that happens a lot, and that is there's this cross-pollination between the broadcast business and the FCC. We have now an FCC commissioner who is a former radio station owner in the Northwest, by way of being a congressman. Now we have this, somebody leaving the FCC and joining the broadcast business. And people seem to think that this is this can happen, and there isn't any kind of collusion going on. There isn't any back scratching going on. And probably people would say, well, Phil, why do you care? It's your industry if they benefit. No, I don't benefit. That's what you don't get. I don't benefit. Talent doesn't benefit. Those of us, you have never seen an industry before in your life where the people that are actually on the microphone, me, have nothing whatsoever to do with deriving any benefit from the dealings that broadcasters have with the FCC. I don't get any benefit from this. The guys that are lining their pockets are the CEOs and the owners and the FCC commissioners, which I've said many times. I don't doubt for a minute they're not getting paid off. I think there's a lot of money passing hands. But now, on top of that, when a group of kids who work with a nonprofit to help young ladies become filmmakers tweet a comment, which is basically the truth, saying, wow, real revolving door act there. How in hell can you possibly be objective or objectively deal on behalf of a company or on behalf of an industry? You used to be in the FCC. Now you're working for NBC. What's going on there? When they tweeted that, they got their grant money pulled back from that company. Meaning, when you give grant money to a charity, it's basically advertising for your company. And so the people need to shut up and toe the line. Well, these are filmmakers. How do they do that? All right. We'll be back Monday here on our national show. And coming up tonight on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, produced by Jason Rantz. Technical director is John Elk, and our associate producer has been Dan Northcraft. World-famous Phil Hendry Show, also online at philhendryshow.com.
Phil Hendry.